Good morning. Today is Tuesday, July the 18th. Is it flickering in your home? Joining us this morning, oh, a bright light to us all.
See?
Yeah, right.
That's why it's flickering,
right? Sure. General Manager of the Hubbock Community Service District, Dave Hall.
Morning, Brian.
Yeah, right.
good bright flickery morning.
Yeah, the head flickerer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, what, six or seven little
sparks? Should have had somebody from PG&E today.
Well, we had to be satisfied with you. Oh, our quote this morning comes from David Crosby.
Oh, yeah.
Stills, Nash and Young.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
He may or may not. I'm not sure with this quote. Make a bigger space in the universe for your head to live in, and it will grow to fill the space.
Well, that's absolutely true,
Yeah. Okay.
How many times have we seen that happen, huh?
Yeah. Sure. I've been dealing with too many electeds lately, huh? No reference to your board.
No.
All pinheads.
No.
I mean,
hey,
no,
now.
Wait a minute.
Hey.
You're in trouble now,
I was
buddy.
Thinking of watching more on the TV news at night, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Do they still do that? I don't know.
That's what I hear.
I get home at 6:30.
I know. Yeah,
okay. Just goes downhill so fast.
Yeah. I get my news from the radio.
Yeah. Nice try.
Yeah.
Nice save. Yeah. Me too. Oh, boy. Last year at this time, it was drought.
Yep.
Most of the state. Now it's a little bit of fire. Governor Jerry was doing handstands because of the new opportunity to sign another piece of legislation associated with the environment. Okay. What are you hearing? Is this continuing to go down that same trail of more regulation, more monitoring, more and more government ease, or are we starting to get people to realize they're still skiing at Squaw? We don't have to have some of these issues quite as tightly monitored.
I think we're always going to have, in the current environment, we're always going to have more legislation and more regulation. That just seems to be the way the world works, whether we need it or not, which most of the time I think we don't. That's coming up. But the bright side is, and you touched on it just for a second there, as far as water supplies go this year, so the drought's been over. There's just a little bit in Southern California, and it kind of sweeps around into Southern Arizona, and the rest of the state is good to go. For us around here, today Ruth Lake is about 85% full, which is about 93% of its 10-year average for being full. And it would be 100%, but for its they're going to do some maintenance on the dam later this summer.
Oh, so
they've got the cool down just a little bit, but still at 85% full, that's only 6 feet from the spillway. So that's not very much.
It's interesting. Having gone up to the family cabin in Trinity County the last couple of weeks, just at the Friday Ridge Road on 299, just
right
east of Willow Creek, there's a little, we call it a waterfall, a little spill.
Right, yeah.
And it normally only runs until May. It's still running now.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there's water.
There's water.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hall. Dave, the aquifers that L.A. and the Southern California metropolitan areas draw their water supply from, other than, I guess, Mono Lake, I don't know. How are those doing? Because that was the thing that early on a lot of folks were pointing to and saying, C. Oh, that would be SEA.
Yeah.
No.
SEE. Although the SEA part is rolling along.
Yeah, so. The desalinization right. stuff. Are those areas where water is, those reservoirs underground, are they also filling back up?
Well, they are not, and Southern California gets, like you just mentioned, most of their water from either the aqueduct or from some of the lakes that are far east of L.A., not so much from groundwater. The groundwater, big groundwater users, of course, are the folks in the Sacramento Valley and in the San Joaquin Valley. The ag guys are the ones that really are the ones that hit the aquifers pretty hard. And they recover, and there's recycled water programs where they treat wastewater and then they reinject it back into the aquifer. So there's a lot of programs that go on. They did, the last 3 years, they did draw them down quite a bit. And remember, too, that the water that at the level that they're getting is very old. You know, it's in the tens of thousands of years old. So it's taken a long time to get down there. So once it's gone, it's not going to recharge on its own very quickly. But again, there's lots of programs now that are working on recharging those aquifers artificially, but putting them back in shape. Interestingly, in the drought, all the drought regulations and everything, and we mentioned this a couple of years ago, the state stayed a long ways away from really doing too much with the folks that used groundwater. They didn't have a lot of the regulations. They did carve them out as a special thing. As you know, we are the only, Humboldt Community Services District is the only water agency around the bay here that actually has some wells that are a normal part of operation. Arcata has some, but they haven't used them for a bunch of years. We actually do for our Humboldt Hill area and kind of South District area. We actually have three wells that are in the Elk River aquifer. When the regulations came down, we actually had kind of two sets of things we had to deal with. We had the normal surface water ones, and there was another set that dealt with the groundwater. And so that's it sort of put us in a weird special category. We had to meet higher standards of conservation than anybody else around because we were actually using some groundwater. But at the same time, the state didn't go as far as to say, you know, here's the goals for groundwater, and here's a bunch of information about groundwater. Now, that being said, there are now in aquifers in the state of California that they classify as a high priority. So these are aquifers that get a lot of use out of them. The only one in our area here that fits that category is the city of Fortuna. And Rio Del, I think, because they tap into the Eel River aquifer. Elk River, not so much. But those high priority ones actually have to come up with a groundwater management plan, and it's very very prescriptive on how to deal with this that the state's put out as far as rules, what they got to come up with in the plan, how they're going to manage it, how they're going to monitor it, all this kind of stuff. So that's just kind of kicking off. Our Elk River basin that we tap into is a low priority one, so we probably will at some point, but it's probably a decade or more down the road.
What's the distinction between the high priority and low priority and surface water versus groundwater?
I honestly think that you have reservoirs and you have, you know, rivers and things that maybe people pull water out of. Those surface water sources are easy to see, easy to monitor. You can see how much water's in them, how much water's coming into them. Groundwater's, you know, it's hard to monitor those. It's hard. It's more expensive. It's, you know, who's tapping into what, and the impacts aren't well known. So I think the state, to a certain extent, just backed away from making, until these groundwater plans are in place, making a just sort of carving them out and saying we're gonna drive it hard on the surface water supply.
So the groundwater is less bureaucratic. I don't know, less regulated. Less information's needed to be provided.
I think it's there needs to be more information on it, and that's being collected now. And again, these groundwater plans are going to fill in the exact how much can they use, how much can they draw them down. You know, what are the sources of recharge for the aquifers, those kind of things that are, you know, some areas have done a great job of this. Some areas haven't thought about it. They just drill more wells if they can't if they're starting to run out of water. So the state's trying to get it on an even more of an even keel.
But I would think that a lot of the jurisdictions that have got wells drilled are the small little guys that can't afford these big old studies and to be able to do the monitor and where the major municipal districts or the metropolitan areas, yeah, I mean, you know, a couple $1 million is no big deal. Whip that one on Rio Del.
Right.
Oops. Things are significantly different.
I think that's why they've got into this system of kind of grading the high, medium, and low priority basins, aquifers. And so the high priority ones are the big players, and they draw a lot of water, like a lot of the ag users and things like this. The small ones, like some of the small cities and stuff, they're going to be down the line.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30. We'll be back with more from Dave Ball.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hull. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by REDEC. Dave, the Community Services District, you're in a new budget year now.
Right.
You're in the middle of the construction period now.
Correct.
You've got some of these changing edicts coming out of the state. How do you and the board project 5 years out? 10 years out. I mean, how do you anticipate things that really are almost unmanageable? You know, the weather you're not going to manage.
Right.
Budgets are going to be more a whim of the state. You've got the rate increase impact that you put into play, so you've got some stability there, but the regulations can nail you. How do you build a 5 or 10 year model out knowing that, you know, you may only be 60-70% accurate?
Well, I think the way we do it is to a certain extent you have to put on a little bit of blinders and just look at your core mission and what you got to get done and where the trouble spots are and you know where the revenues are coming in and the expenses and just focus on that out, and this is what we do out 5 years. All these things that are on the outside is why we redo this rolling 5 year plan every year. So when some regulations drop in, when the weather changes, when something like this, you know, then we adapt as we go. But we still have the long range kind of the goal out here of the 5 years. And then we actually look 10 and 20 on some of the long cycle sorts of things like tank painting and things like that. So, but we do kind of look, we don't really consider a lot of those unknowns when we're working on the core mission, and then every year we reevaluate to see where those things
so
are.
So you kind of start putting meat on the bones.
Yeah, well, look at 5 years, we got to replace this, we got to fix this, here's the plan of the improvements we're going to make to the system, and then each year we revisit that, and if something's changed, then we adapt to that. There are unknowns, and that takes time to track that stuff to try to figure out exactly what it is. Because a lot of times the folks that come up with these things don't really know where or what kind of impacts they have. They just think it's a good idea. So we have to be the ones to try to figure out. We collectively in the water business have to figure out the way to implement it and make it work the best we can.
When droughts come through, like the cycle you just came out of, I can remember, I don't know if we were in your office or was here, talking about, at one hand, you've got to conserve. On the other hand, that's your moneymaker. And kind of getting nailed from both ends.
Right.
Is it possible to have enough contingency funds so when that scenario plays out again, you're able to ride it through, rather than you got your 2 or 3% that's sitting there, okay, fine, but when push comes to shove, that ain't enough to make it happen.
Right.
You're not going to have an emergency rate increase. I mean, that one's going to go over like a lead balloon. How do you work through those?
Well, that was part of the art and the science of the rate study that we just went through. They look at all those kind of things, and one of the components that we build into the rate study is making sure that we have adequate reserves to handle not only big emergencies that come up, but also things just like you say. If the state was to say we got to cut water distribution by 50% for some reason, that would have a big financial hit. But we've built up reserves, hopefully that have taken care of that at least for a while.
That's why I was wondering how long does, when you're trying to determine what is a fair amount for contingency, how long, a one budget cycle, a two budget cycle, how many cycles do you have to make allowances for? Because there are some of us that say, Dave, if you got $5, $10, $20 million in reserves,
you got way too much in reserves.
Give it back, baby. It's time.
Exactly.
How do you find that balance?
Well, we have a reserve policy that's actually a fairly short term sort of a thing. It says we're going to have 90 days of operating expenses in the bank. The rate study was built around that, but we try to do a little bit better than that, because of unknowns out there. Now, we have kind of a tier.
Better is defined as more. How from who.
Yeah. But better is we try to have a little bit more in there rather than less in there, because we know that things happen up here, more weather-related than regulatorily related, but we know that. But it's kind of a tiered response. To get back to your question, we have the reserves, but we also, if we get into a situation, let's say the state waves a wand and says you got to cut production by 50%, and we know that's going to be a financial hit. Well, probably the first thing we would do is actually then look at the capital improvement projects that we've got on the books, and we would prioritize those and say, What are the things that we absolutely have to do, or it's going to be a major problem? What are the things that we can defer for another year or two? Now, of course, that's always a bad cycle to get into, relying on deferring maintenance, because ultimately then you got to pay the piper at some point when it all fails. But for short-term situations, and we did this last budget year also. We had the unexpected expenses at the city's treatment plant. We had to come up with a bunch of money. We pulled back a bunch of projects and put them off till this fiscal year.
So even though it's structured, there's still flexibility.
Correct.
Structural flexibility.
Structural flexibility. It's a definite maybe.
KINS. News and information time, 8:42. We'll be back with more from Dave Hall.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to talk shop this morning with Mr. Hall from Community Services District. That'd be Dave, not his dad.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Who's also David, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm not a junior.
No, you always wanted the full meal, yeah, didn't you?
Yeah. Can't you tell?
Yeah. Dave, the earthquakes that happened yesterday, there was the big end up north. If there's a tidal wave, earthquake, some of those types of events. How do you guys respond to that? How do you determine if there's going to be goofy water in the system, if there's a major break, if there's what's your 2-minute response? What do you do first?
Well, the 2-minute response is to if we get, let's say, a big Cascadia event, so we know it's going to be here in a few minutes, or it has the potential for a wave to be here in a few minutes, then we get, as soon as we can, we get all our people, we lock our stuff down and get out of that zone. And, you know, we're actually in a great spot up on the hill up there in Cutton, so we're well above anything that's going to happen anyway. So that's beforehand. On the rebound, we have a lot of telemetry that we'll have to see if it's still sitting in place. All the water districts do. They can remotely read, you know, tank levels and all these kind of things. So we'll see if we've got leaks in tanks. Some of our tanks have these seismic valves, so that if there's enough shaking, they'll shut a valve, so that if we suspect there'll be leaks in the system, you know, that maybe pipe's broken and we don't want to drain the tank, so they will actually shut it off. So we've got those kind of things in place, but monitor that stuff to the extent we can. Mostly it's going to be eyes on the ground, so send everybody, all hands on deck, people all heading all different directions to check out all of our facilities and report back. Our office turns into sort of incident command. We work with the other agencies, and there you go.
I wouldn't think you'd go down into the basement for OES.
Yes.
That you guys would be out.
Yeah.
Because I don't think a lot of folks appreciate the immediacy and the need immediately for water, for drinkable water, period. I know what they say. Right. You know, nobody's got 100 gallons of water for every person for, you know, to make it through 2 or 3 days. It just isn't there. So that being the case, I would see that you guys are as critical as PG&E or the gas companies power to the facilities.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can live without electricity. You can't live without water, right?
So, not for too long.
Yeah, not for too long. So it is actually very critical. And so one of the other things that we do, of course, is we'll not only check our facilities, but then we'll having the wells that we have gives us a little bit of sustainability. If something happens to the big pipeline that comes from the Mad River to Eureka and us, we've got maybe another source that we can be sustainable.
I can rest at night now.
You can rest at night, Brian.
Thank you for coming
in,
sir.
At least for here at the radio station.
You got it. Yeah. See everybody tomorrow.
Bye.